Welcome to the You Can Man podcast, episode 79. I'm Josh.
I'm Tim.
And I'm Dave.
And on this week's episode, you should know how to grill.
All right, guys, welcome back to the You Can Man podcast, where we believe what one man can do, you can do as well. With a little help from your friends and the proper know-how, we're going to be bringing some serious grilling know-how with our in-studio guest that we have. Alan, say hello.
Hey, guys.
Welcome.
Yes, we've got Alan Sears in studio with us this evening as we record. So we're looking forward to the knowledge that Alan has going to bring to the table in regards to grilling. And this isn't going to be some super pro grilling thing. This
is like, hey, take it easy on my man. He knows what he's doing.
Well, you know, maybe we'll
average Joe.
Yeah. I mean, now Alan's, he's a pretty modest pit master, so I hear. So he's got a lot of knowledge to bring, but we're going to kind of approach it. You know, what are those steps I need to take to bring my grill game up to the next step? So that's what we're going to be talking about on this week's show. But guys, what has been going on this week?
Man, I mentioned it, I think, on the last podcast, but my bathroom renovation in the basement, setting a new tub. Man, I thought I had it down. This new tub, it's steel. It's not cast iron. Like, I took the 300-pound cast iron one out and put like a 65-pound steel tub in. One man, like with my wingspan, it's kind of hard. And I mean, the bathroom is exactly as wide as the tub. So wrestling it into place is not fun. But
is it all like wobbly on you? Like it's all shaking around and you're, you know, trying to wrestle this thing in there?
It's not easy.
If only you had another You Can Man host that lives right across the street from you.
I don't have any friends though. So
yeah.
I kind of like to do these things alone. Lone wolf it. So anyway, setting a tub is a nightmare because I set it in mortar, which is like next level. Like in the instructions, they're like, you don't have to use mortar. You can just use this styrofoam cooler that's slapped to the bottom of the tub and just sit it down in there and you're good to go. I'm like, no. But at the bottom, they're like, or you can use mortar if you really want to.
If you want to make
that's
your life
how
hard.
I do it, right? So I get it in there, whatever. It dries. It sits. I put a bag of concrete in the bottom of it to just seat it, you know, while it's drying. Week later, I go back down and I put my hand on the bottom of the tub. Like I take the concrete bag out, put my hand on the bottom of the tub, and the bottom of the tub is flexing like just so slightly. But when it flexes, there's this big crack, like a pop. Ooh. Every time. Like it's just like pop, pop, pop. Every time I put my hand, I'm like, what is going on? It was so loud. I'm like, well, I'm not living like this. So I just pull the tub back out. The styrofoam piece remains in place. And what was popping was, there was one little glue strip on the top of the styrofoam on the underside of the tub that was just attaching and detaching every time you would set foot. Super annoying. So I pulled the styrofoam up. The mortar was still there. It had molded to the styrofoam. So I just went in and went to town with some caulk and adhesive, just slathered both sides of the styrofoam in this stuff so that I built up any gap under there. I'm sure those guys listening, you know, cringing, but and then I filled the tub with water to seat it and it's good to go.
Is it
going to
be one of those, the guy that goes to take that out and they're like, what?
Oh yeah. Yeah. When someone pulls that up, they're going to be like, what happened?
See, you could have just left it. Cause I mean, the tub's going to leak and all that water is going to get under there and it's going to clean it all. I mean, I got three leaking tubs at home, so I know.
Oh, wow.
You'd have been all right.
Yeah. But anyway, I think we're good. I'll report back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Wrestling tub's not fun.
Yeah, I don't want any part of that.
So last time I talked about chocolate peanut butter pie Oreos.
Did you bring them down here?
I didn't.
Oh! Sorry.
Well, thanks for bringing that up again.
But I also discovered that I really like butter pecan ice cream, and I'm thinking,
I do too.
Am I like officially a dad?
I was going to say you're an old man.
I mean,
I've always liked it though.
I remember my grandfather liked butter pecan. Man,
what is that?
Werther's Originals.
Yeah, Werther's Originals. Now I like Werther's Originals now. So
yeah,
I guess
you
that
do.
Makes me old. But
is that a like an old man taste that I just have acquired?
Maybe it's a classic taste. I don't
you
know.
Haven't
it is classic.
It's like recent for you.
I don't know that I ever
even gave really it a shot.
Really gave it a shot, yeah. Because I was like, butter pecan. Yeah.
I've been on that train for a while. I can have, but I do not discriminate when it comes to ice cream, for sure.
Yeah.
So you bought some, like a half gallon of butter pecan ice cream?
Aldi, all nice. The way.
All right, man.
Look, y'all, Aldi has got some great ice cream.
It does. All their snacks are delicious.
Just the cheapest Aldi. Don't even go for their specialty, nothing. No, just the basic Aldi ice cream. It's good.
The bottom shelf Aldi ice cream.
Yes. Where do you guys go to Aldi? I've never even
stepped foot in. It's right next door. What?
You don't need to go, man. You walk in. They don't have lights there. There's no lights. Like, you can't see anything.
Look, Aldi, it's like the opposite of Publix. It's like where shopping is definitely not a pleasure. And they're like,
and they got dirt floors and stuff, man. That's not.
They're like, how quickly can we get you out of here?
Yes, they're about efficiency.
It's just, yeah. To me, you know, if I get something budget, I normally go to Walmart. But if I'm getting, I don't ever want to buy meat or anything at a place that's considered discount.
I wouldn't go there. Yeah,
you're not getting no meat. I wouldn't get produce there, but I will say
produce is fine.
They're
bananas are fine there.
I mean, I've had like their cookies and their crackers, and they're kind of like the knockoff versions of whatever.
They're way better. They're
always they are always really good.
They have all the knockoff Girl Scout cookies, which are cardboard. Sorry, Girl Scouts. But Aldi, they actually taste delicious.
Yeah, they do a good job with that.
Yeah, I can't believe we haven't talked more about Aldi.
Yeah, they should sponsor us.
They really should.
I gotta go. I've never been.
Okay, now you might need a
right next
sponsor,
to the wing.
Okay. So you might need somebody to go with you.
You need a first trip buddy.
You do. Right. You really do.
Because, the cart and the quarter, like, how are you going to do
it
that?
That's right. You rent the cart or something like
that? Yeah, you got to have the quarter. It was funny. My son and I were just driving through the parking lot of Aldi, and I saw a lady walking towards the store, and then she was digging in her purse, and then she stops. And she's digging in her purse, and then she turns around. I was like, oh, you know what? I bet she forgot her quarter. And then my son was like, oh, man, I feel it for those first time Aldi people. Because he knows. Like, he knows you got to have somebody with you.
So you rolled down the window and you handed her a quarter.
I should have.
Is it like Lidl or Lidl?
Yes.
I haven't been in one of those.
I haven't been in one of those yet either. I would really like to try it because they just opened up one sort of close to us.
Yep.
But, man, we could talk a lot about Aldi. So our family motto is kind of like, if Aldi doesn't have it, then we don't get it. I mean, that's good. Pretty
you guys
much
are frugal.
It.
I respect it.
Yeah. Anyways, but that's about all I got. Dave, you got anything?
I got nothing for you this week.
Okay.
It's an off week for you guys. Okay.
So. Well, Alan, do you have any random thing to add before we get into your introduction?
No, I mean, I've just, in the spirit of the show, I'm literally just. Tomorrow, I'm finishing replacing the last door in my house.
Oh, we got to go. We got to ask
been
Alan.
Swapping what is all the doors out in my house over the last week. And I have an older house built in 1970.
Nice.
So I've run into one problem on the last one where the rough opening is not square anymore.
Nah.
So the door has been this battle between, should I plane the door more? Should I change it? So what I ended up doing was just ripping out the jamb in general. And now tomorrow I'm putting a new one in there and trying to square it up as best I can.
Oh, we feel for you.
Yeah, that is a battle of, I mean, just sheer willpower.
You will sweat trying to get it
in. That's the way to do it, or else you're going to, like in my house, which was a flip, none of the doors closed because they just put, you know, a new door in there and, you know, it's not square, whatever.
And so I've learned, luckily I've had my dad helping me, but it's because he's got some experience with this, but compounding the problem is the one that is messed up is on a bathroom I just remodeled. So now all the trim that I just did on the other side, I got to rip all that out to make it match. So I did all the ripping out today. Tomorrow I'm going to put it back in there. So that's
all right. That's what we're gonna circle back on your for DIY sure. score in 1 second.
Okay. Yeah. So Josh, why don't you? So Dave and Josh have known Alan for a very long time.
Yes, yeah. I've known Alan since 2003, which is more than 5 years, less than 30, and we met through a marching band life. He and I were both instructors up at the local high school where I went to high school. Dave went to high school. Tim went to high school.
Yeah,
we were both instructors there. Just hit it off. Man, just what a friendship over the years.
Yeah.
And Alan is a man of many talents. His main gig is composing and arranging for percussion. He does that at Kennesaw State University. Mm-hmm. He is the percussion coordinator, director.
I'm the drumline marching band instructor.
I was hoping for dean of drumline.
I don't want to put the bar too high.
Director of drumline. So he's the main guy for the marching band at KSU. And then he also still teaches at Sprayberry. He teaches multiple classes there for the percussion.
Yeah. And for our listeners who are not from around here, Kennesaw State University is a large school.
Over 40,000 students.
Yes. Now. And last I knew it was the third largest in the state. It might have been bumped up by now.
Honestly, I'd have to look again. It keeps fluctuating because in Georgia, all these schools keep combining. You know, like KSU got really big because they absorbed Dave's school.
Yeah. And I don't want to talk about that.
The same kind of thing. Like Georgia Southern just absorbed Armstrong and Atlantic. So I think their numbers are pretty similar now. But yeah, it's up there. It's like the third or fourth largest one in the state.
So you're a pretty big deal.
I mean, I guess.
Yeah, Alan also runs a nonprofit percussion ensemble, which I was a part of back in the day. But how long have you been doing that since 2002,
2003? 2003 was the first year on that. It's a competitive indoor group, Winter Guard International, WGI. Some people know what it is. Some people don't. And it truly is world competition. There's groups from Taiwan and, you know, Japan that come and stuff like that. And Atlanta Quest is the name of the group. And it's, without me getting too deep into it, because some people know about the activity, some people don't. It's kind of crazy. Like kids ages 14 to 23, they can't be older than 23 and they go to championships. For our particular ensemble, people come from all over the Southeast every weekend to participate in it. So it's a huge commitment. We had a person move from Japan and live here for the season so they could be part of it. So it's I compare it to NASCAR as best I can. It's the closest similarity that people are comfortable with because we're a unit and we're sponsored by companies and we show off their brands. Kind of like when you watch a NASCAR race, they've got their brands all over the cars. It's the same kind of thing for the independent circuit that we're in.
And the sound level is on par with a NASCAR race as well. If you've ever been to a drumline show, holy cow.
It's designed for huge arenas. So if you see it locally in a gym, it might blow you out a little bit. But the shows are designed for massive arenas. That's where championships are, stuff like that.
And the reason we got Alan on, so Alan's obviously super talented, creative dude, one of the most creative guys I know. Along with that, oftentimes goes multiple hobbies. And one of those for Alan is grilling. And man, if we're having a cookout, Alan, I mean, I don't know if he does it just to be nice, but Alan ends up on the grill.
Now, there ain't nobody else cooking.
And like, I'm not letting anybody else make me a burger except for Alan. So Alan's the guy, and he's got tons of information, way more than we need on this show. But he's going to go through the basics of grilling. So if you're just a guy that's like, hey, man, I just bought my $120 gas grill, like I did, from the big box store. I don't know how to use it. I don't know how to use it well. I always ruin the food every time. We're going to walk you through that with Alan. But first, where are you on the DIY scale, Alan? You've heard the show.
You know the charts. I hear it.
You know that Dave's like a 2. I'm about a 10.
Josh is a 1.
So this is where I get confused on this because the scale to me, I don't know how to do it. Because if I'm comparing myself to my father, I'm like a 3. But if I compare myself to my friends and what everybody else is doing, I guess I'm closer to a 7.
Dad can't be there. Like, he can't be helping you. So
I would still be a 7 comparative to I told Josh this before. Generationally, I feel like we're getting less and less do it yourself as time goes on.
In 2020, you're a 7. In 1950, you're maybe a 2.
Yeah, maybe. Like my real quick, my grandfather was a tool engineer for Lockheed, but he also, he made plenty of money, but he also was a master plumber and did plumbing on the weekends because that's just what he did, you know, and he did everything himself. And that kind of rubbed off on my dad. We built the house when I was 11. My father built the house we live in. Like, he was the contractor. He did everything. So when I was 12, I was moving sheetrock and putting it up where it needed to go. And
Alan's picking up that steel bathtub. And
So it kind of was forced on myself and my family a little bit. So I don't think I really processed the idea of do it yourself. It was right. just life in general.
Yeah.
So now as I've gotten older, I still do. And I mean, this is with my father, is from building a house to rebuilding an engine. I mean, I've done a lot of stuff with him and I'm mostly his assistant. As we've gotten older, you know, I kind of do things on my own. So I'll just give myself a 6, maybe. I don't want to go too high. I mean, you know,
if you're putting in doors in your house, you're like a 7.
Okay. I'm all right. Say well, 7. You know,
solid 7. We'll give it to him.
Yeah.
All right. So, Alan, right. where do we start? We've got the grill. I mean, do you want to walk through, like, if you haven't gotten a grill, do you have any of that? Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. I think everybody should at least try grilling or try to get into it a little bit for a couple reasons. One is, you know, there's just a pride factor with kind of making your own food, you know, and especially if it's good, you know, that's another, it's good even if it's not great. Like if you did it, you're going to feel kind of good about it. But if it's good and other people think it's good, then there's a pride factor in there, you know, that you know, just makes you feel like you've accomplished something. So I think everybody should attempt it, you know, to try to get into it a little bit, at least know the basics. And not, I find a lot of times when I talk to people about it, most of the time, they're not sure how to get going on it. They're afraid of it for some reason, which I never really understood, but just give it a shot anyway. But if you're trying to start grilling, there's just one or two things that you got to decide from the beginning, okay? First things first, let me talk about this. Notice we're saying grilling, not barbecuing.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
If you're in the lifestyle, so to speak.
Do you guys have a name? Is there like a name for like the grill masters?
Well, grill master would be different than, say, a pit master.
Okay.
I just want to make that distinction because I do, I've gotten into smoking and barbecuing in the last probably 6-7 years. But that's a different discipline than grilling. Mm. So the reason I bring that up is, if you're just talking to your mom and nobody knows anything, hey, you want to come over for a barbecue this week? It's probably not going to be a big deal. But if you're talking to people in the know and you say, hey, you want to come over for a barbecue this week? And then you show up and there's only a grill, they might knock you down
people
a little
are
bit.
Be upset.
Your manhood in their eyes might drop just a little bit, right? Barbecue is super slow, takes a long time, and grilling is generally fast, right? So those are the two big differences. We're not even going to really talk about barbecuing because that's a much harder discipline to master, in my opinion, than grilling.
Sure.
So,
and is that distinction in the terminology a U.S. thing? Because I feel like other cultures, like the Australians, like they just anything that's like over open flame in any way, shape, or form is just barbecue right?
Yeah, that's true. It is more of a U.S. Delineation. And even with that, you'll get from Texas to North Carolina to Georgia.
Sure.
I'm not going to get into all that because everybody will argue. Like if you had a barbecue show going on and you had somebody from each part of the country, they would talk for hours about why theirs is better or how it's different or whatever. So I don't want to get into that too much. But grilling has a little bit of that, but not as much. So the big difference in grilling, just so I can put a finer point on it, is you got to decide if you're going to do it with charcoal or you're going to do it with propane or natural gas, whatever you're going to do. There's a lot of purists who would argue that they don't like propane. It doesn't give you any flavor, this, that, and the other. I use both, right, depending on what I'm going to do. But if somebody's just starting out, go get you a gas grill.
Is that the easiest thing to do?
Yeah. The easiest thing to do because you don't have to learn how to build your fire, right, which is a whole other thing. If you want to invest in that, the time in that, it's not really expensive. You want to invest the time in that, then go ahead and do it. There's a lot of things out there. You know, there's charcoal briquettes, which are the easiest thing for people to use. There's lump charcoal now. Weber makes these charcoal chimneys, which make it way easier to build your fire. It's basically a metal cylinder with air vents on the bottom. Some of them have a trap door now where you don't even have to flip it over. Just hold it out and drop it and you load it up with your charcoal, get it going. And then you just dump it into your grill as opposed to the old days where you had to kind of arrange your briquettes the right way so the airflow would be good and you could get it going.
I've never heard that phrase, like building your fire for, I almost said barbecue.
On a grill.
On a grill, right? I've never heard that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's got to be built.
You got to do it. You got to do it right.
If you just put a thin layer of charcoal unlit in your grill, it's going to take it forever to get to a temperature that's usable. That's the first thing, for all of them to be lit, all of them to be at the same, going at basically the same temperature. Also, the other thing about building your fire is whether you're using a gas grill or you're using a charcoal grill, you need to set up zones in your grill to where one side is hot and you've got at least a cool area that's like a safety zone in case anything happens, because you are dealing with flame. It's not like cooking in your oven, which is consistent, and burning something takes a long time. When you're grilling, if you're doing it the right way, you got to watch it, because it could light up and you need somewhere to move it. So that's why I recommend people using a propane grill to start out with, because now you're only worried about learning how to cook. You're not worried about trying to learn to control the flame. And then what I think is, after you get kind of used to it a little bit, it's worth investing your time into charcoal.
What should we be looking for that entry-level gas grill? Because the one I've got is not good, but I've just been rocking it for several years now. Yeah. You know, I was thinking mine has hot and cold zones, mm-hmm. but not on purpose.
Well, yeah. So with grills, much like most things, right, you're going to get what you pay for. You know, you can go get a $100 gas grill and it will, I mean, you can use it.
Get a season out of it.
Yeah. But it's going to break down much faster, right? The components, most time it's made with really thin metal, doesn't retain heat very well. And if you're just cooking hot dogs and maybe a couple burgers, yeah, you can probably get by with that. It's not, you know, like I say, it's not rocket science to grill a hot dog. Pretty easy.
I'm pretty good at that.
Yeah. It's not that big a deal.
Microwave, baby.
But you do get what you pay for. And that's the important thing. So I have a very large family. And one of the ways I started doing this is I always cook for the family after church on Sundays, Saturdays, we get together, whatever. For a while, when we were doing it, it was always at my parents' house. My father had a kind of a cheapo grill. Because we use it so much with so many people, it would break down pretty quick. You know, after a season and a half or whatever, you're buying so many replacement components for it that you might as well buy another grill. About four years ago, he bit the bullet and bought a very nice Weber. Weber makes very nice gas grills. Heat retention is very high. The components are solid. The actual grates that you get, you can get cast iron grates with theirs, things like that. So it's held up way better. We're on year four now, and it's still great, whereas we had been burning through those before. Now, the cost of a Weber is a lot. So basically, if you're going to grill all the time, this is the way I look at it. You could buy the cheaper grills, but if you're going to grill on a pretty regular basis, you're probably going to spend the same amount of money over an 8-year period. Whereas if you would have just bought a nice one in the first place.
That's what I wanted to hear, because that's probably one of those investments that it does make sense to go ahead, as Dave would say, buy once, cry once.
Right? Got to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what I feel like I haven't done.
And you're going to use it more because like you have it. It's a nicer grill. It's nicer to walk out to. It's not in disrepair. As these other ones, you're just like, I don't want to fiddle with it today. Correct. So we're not going to grill out.
Yeah, I've got a Weber. I've just left it in the rain for like literally 10 years. That thing is going strong, baby.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, that's the advantages to it. And Weber is a great company in terms of, there's a couple other really great grill companies out there too. But Weber is pretty much the, in my opinion, the first step into the high-end market. There's stuff beyond it that is more expensive, but diminishing returns there on what you're getting after that point. Weber is a great company too. They continue to make replacement parts for their older grills for a long time. So if you buy a particular model and then 4 years later they don't make that model anymore, you can still go on their website or Lowe's or Home Depot or whatever and order a new burner or, you know, some new grates or a new resting rack, whatever you need, they'll have that stuff. They'll still make it. Whereas if you buy some of the cheaper brands, you know, that you'll walk into the Home Depot or wherever, and they've got this awesome, it looks beautiful to you because it's like five burners and it's massive. And you're like, what? It's only $300. I'm getting this, but chances are a couple years down the road,
that brand might not even that be brand, in stock.
Yes, like, correct. And even like I'm a somewhat of a fan of Charbroil that are out. They're not as expensive and they're pretty well made, but they're not the Weber. And Charbroil also, they'll still make replacement parts, but not quite as long in my experience. If you're looking for something for an older Charbroil, you may be able to find it, but Charbroil is like that middle grade. So, yeah, if anybody should get out there and get started, just buy something to start if you're interested in it. But the Charbroil might be a good entry for you. It's in that middle market. And if you really think you're going to keep it for a while, go with something like a Weber that's a little more expensive.
Okay. I would say the next best transitional question would be, if I'm just starting grilling, what is the food that I could grill that I have the least likelihood of really screwing up?
Well, like I said, you can grill a hot dog on there, but I don't really even consider that. You know, it's
sure.
It tastes better on a grill than a microwave for sure. So, you know, hot dogs is a good place to start, right? And then for me, dark meat chicken. I try to tell people this all the time. Dark meat chicken is almost idiot proof. It contains a lot of moisture. It's very hard to overcook it. Now, you will, the first couple of times, you will probably mess up the skin, but chicken is incredibly cheap. Like, you can get a pack of chicken legs for like $4, and it's like 10 of them. If you start with something like that, if you mess it up the first couple of times, you didn't sink a ton of money into trying to understand how this...
You're not ruining your filet.
Correct. Yeah, you don't want to go out and buy, like the picture I sent you the other day, you don't want to go buy like a $45 tomahawk steak the first time you're trying to grill.
That makes sense. And I'll be honest, Alan is truly the first person that I ever heard that said that dark meat chicken is edible. Like, because when I was growing up, my mom was always like, you want white meat. It's just white meat for him. Yeah, I have white meat. I didn't even know, like, people ate dark meat chicken.
Yeah, dark meat chicken, to me, is far superior.
Yeah, just I've heard you say that before.
Tastes way better. There's just more flavor. Like, white meat chicken generally has very little flavor. It only takes on whatever you impart into it. Whereas dark meat has a little bit of its own distinctive flavor, a little more. And like I say, it's very hard to dry out. Like a chicken breast, you throw that on the grill, you can dry that out pretty quick. Mm-hmm. But with thighs and legs, they're a little more forgiving if you kind of screw it up. So
very good.
You know, some people stay away from chicken. They think it's hard because of the skin. But for me, it's so cheap, it's worth your experimentation because you're not going to spend a ton of money on it.
Now, what about burgers? Because I feel like that's the one thing. I mean, that's the thing that I grill pretty, you know, that's like the exclusive thing that I grill are burgers. And so is that an easy thing for people to kind of like step into?
Yeah, it's cheaper, that's for sure. But there's a couple things about burgers, right? Here's the way I think of it. And then I'm going to talk about, after I talk about this, I'm going to talk about something that applies to everything that you cook. So this will be a good kind of intro into that. Like the type of ground beef that you buy is very critical for your burger. Most people use chuck, which is 80-20. This means 80% lean, 20% fat. That's what that means when you see it on the labels. Most people use chuck. It's kind of universally known as the best meat for burgers. When you start moving that ratio around, like if you get lean ground beef, chances are your burger's going to have a much higher chance of being dry, right? And this is for those people that are avid. Yes, you can do custom grinds. I do that sometimes, but that's a whole nother thing. We're just talking about the first time you do it. Chuck is the best thing to do. Now, here's where burgers get tricky. And this is why those zones on the grill are important. Since you have 80-20 and there's 20% fat in that, flame ups are going to happen. There's just really no way around it. If you're not getting flame ups when you cook a burger that's 80-20, it means your grill is not hot enough, which I'll talk about that in just one second. So I'm all about people trying to do burgers, but they're really easy to overcook. You know, depending on how you like yours, you know, that could... You could ruin dinner that night, I guess, you know, yes. Like if everybody's like...
I've done it. I've made like, charcoal briquettes on the grill.
Correct. Yeah, that's what will happen a lot. So I think burgers are great. And I definitely think it's one of the first things that you get into, but they're not quite as forgiving is what I'm saying is like how chicken is. Probably most people like a burger better. But if we're talking about just learning how to kind of control the grill, chicken's pretty forgiving in that regard, you know. All right. So with anything, there's what you got to remember about grilling. And I'm not going to get too down crazy into the chemistry, but it is important you understand a couple of little factors because they apply to anything that you're going to cook, right? So if you understand what it is you're trying to do, you're going to have some more success. So here's the first thing that you got to remember. If you don't know about it, you can look it up, but you don't have to. But the Maillard reaction is what happens in meat when you cook it, right? Anything when you cook bread, whatever, the browning of it is called a Maillard reaction. It's French, so it's spelled like Maillard, like M-A-I-L-L-A-R-D. But you can look it up if you want, but here's the basic principle of it. The reason you like food, enjoy it, like you smell it cooking on the grill, and you're like, oh, I'm ready to eat that, is the Maillard reaction, right? Ever pick up ground beef or a steak and smell it before it's been cooked, you don't, it's not really that appealing to you. There's not much in it that...
Unless you like the smell of
blood. Unless you like, yeah, well, that, I'll talk about that in a second too. But the Maillard reaction, so what that basically means is that's when the proteins start to combine with the sugars. They break down when you cook. So that's why this is important, because anything that you cook has to achieve that for you to enjoy it. That's why boiled meat doesn't taste good, because water never gets over 212 degrees. Mm-hmm. And the Maillard reaction happens more than that. You want your grill at least 300 degrees, or that won't happen, right? Here's why that's important. You're going to, as you start messing with your grilling, you're going to start seasoning your food differently. You're going to try different things. You're going to see recipes that you want to try. And you're going to be like, oh, okay, well, let me try this recipe. Well, each time you add something different, the Maillard reaction is different. That's why it tastes different, smells different. It cooks different. So an example is, if I put all food that you put on the grill needs some type, well, some people will say no. I personally believe that anything you put on the grill needs some type of oil or fat. Because if you don't have that, it'll stick to the grill. Your seasoning might not stick as well. Most things I put some type of oil on. So you got to think, like, if I use extra virgin olive oil, it's got a higher smoke point than if I use vegetable oil. So that means when I'm grilling, I have to take that into account about how long it has to sit at what temperature to make the Maillard reaction happen. Okay. That's what makes it taste good. Now I'm gonna quit talking about the boring stuff now, because the more you play around with it, you'll figure it out on your own. You'll say, okay, well, butter flames up and goes away super quick. So if I use butter, you know, I know I got to watch it really fast. It could flame up real quickly. You're using something like extra virgin olive oil. Maybe you got a little more time before it catches fire. You know what I'm talking about? So I'm not going to get too deep into that because it gets boring. It's not a science show. But if you know,
all right, Alan Brown.
If you know what those things do, then when you try to start messing around with it on your own, it's easier for you to figure it out. I think that's why people get discouraged. They're like, oh, I tried to cook these hamburgers and they've caught on fire and they're ruined and I don't want to grill anymore. Well, just remember, you got to keep your eye on those things and you got to play around with that temperature a little bit, right? I don't want to give cold, hard and fast rules for temperature, because depending on the thickness of whatever you're cooking or what temperature you're going for, that's going to vary. But you at least want your grill 300 degrees. Let me just say that. So anything below that, that's where you get into like barbecue, right? Like you're turning it down to like 225, takes longer to happen. So it can dry out your stuff. Remember, barbecue is mostly bigger pieces of meat, whereas grilling is normally smaller ones. So it's a much faster thing. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So yeah, I would experiment around with that burger, but it's not as quite as forgiving as, say, chicken is in terms of when you're going to eat it afterwards.
All right. Do you use a thermometer?
Yes.
While you're grilling?
So that was on my list of things that if I'm put on a list, you'd pick your first grill. The second thing you would do is every time you use food, you need to season it, right? That's the first thing. Salt is your friend. Humans love salt. We're biologically programmed to want salt. Salt, water-soluble proteins in whatever you're cooking. It helps with the Maillard reaction, which tastes better. You get some type of caramelization sometimes, so make sure you salt whatever you're putting on your grill. That's a big one. But then you need temperature monitoring device. So I use a thermometer. Most time I'll use like an instant read, especially if I'm cooking somewhere that's not my home. It's a grill that I'm not 100% used to. I'll always do it. But if I cook bigger pieces of meat, like when we did steak the last time we were at your house and stuff like that, I use a probe thermometer, a digital probe thermometer. Those things are great because you can use them inside too. You're cooking Thanksgiving dinner, you can stick that thing inside your turkey. The cable comes out of the oven, plug it in, close it up, and now you don't have to open the oven all the time to kind of see what's going on. It's monitoring the temperature as you go. That's the same kind of thing for grilling, especially if you're grilling something like a steak that's a bigger cut or something like that. If it's a burger or chicken, I just use an instant read thermometer. These things are really cheap. You can get them. Home Depot will have them in their grilling section, but Home Depot actually charges a little bit more for theirs for whatever reason. You could go to Target or Walmart, and they've got Sunbeam and Sunshine, like these weird little brands, and they're a couple of dollars. And they'll save you a lot when you're actually grilling, because you can monitor the temperature and you know when it needs to come off, as opposed to you just guessing about what's happening all the time. And then from there, you can look online for, like, if you're a medium rare person, that means your meat's got to hit 125 degrees. That's medium rare. And if you like medium, well done, whatever, there's charts all over the internet. You can literally look up the chart. Chicken's 165. You start to memorize them after a while, but you can just go online and put meat temperature chart, and it'll tell you what temperature you're going for.
Yeah, I totally do that all the time.
Can you speak to, that reminded me of meat cooking after you take it off the grill? Because I think a lot of people just run into that. The thermometer will tell them, hey, we're good, but the meat doesn't look right. You know, they're like, it doesn't look ready to eat. And so they just leave it on there. I've done it before myself, even though I know it's wrong. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, so everything that you cook, whether it's in an oven or a grill, but a grill well, let me back up here. The size of what you're cooking matters as well. So you're always going to have carryover heat, or carryover cooking is what a lot of people call it. So I'll give you an example. If you're cooking a very thin steak, it's not going to have a ton of carryover heat because there's not enough mass there to hold on to the thermal energy that's getting put into it. When you take it off, it's probably ready to eat in a minute or two. It's not going to do much. That's if you're, you know, like my mom always liked the thin steak. You know, she was afraid of anything that had any pink in it at all. So it was always the thinner steak. So those are ready immediately. The thicker the meat that you are cooking, however big, if you're doing a roast or you're doing, like I say, one thing's real popular, I brought it up earlier, and one thing that a lot of grillers do now is the tomahawk steaks. They are a ribeye, basically. They're fantastic. You can get those. They're like 3 inches thick in a lot of places. You can get them cut however you want. Something like that is going to have like at least a 10-minute resting period of carryover, right? It's going to keep cooking for that time. So an example is if I eat my medium rare and I'm aiming for 125, I'll take it off at like 121, and then I'll leave the probe thermometer in it, take it off, let it rest, and I can watch the temperature go up. I normally like mine around 128 with the ribeye. Just throw that out there so that all the fat, you know, renders in it. So you can just watch it. And then the minute you start cutting that, it's not going to cook anymore. So you can kind of watch it and kind of get it exactly where you want it to be with the carryover heat. Same thing, you know, just to cross-reference for those of you that, I mean, if you're roasting a chicken in your oven or a turkey, it's the same way. And a turkey will stay hot. I don't know if you've ever cooked like a turkey, but it'll stay hot for like 2 hours after you take it out. It's just the size of whatever you're doing. So just remember that the smaller thing that you're cooking, not going to have a ton of carryover heat that keeps cooking it. The larger it goes up, it'll hold on there. And meat needs to rest anyway, by the way. You guys all know that. I don't know if I should talk about.
To like redistribute the juices, right?
Correct. I mean, all the fibers are super tight because of the heat. So it's just pushing everything out at the time. So if you cut into it, everything's just going to run out all over your plate. You sit there and let it cool for 10 minutes or so, everything relaxes, all the fibers in it relax, and then it'll hold on to the moisture a lot more. So
nice.
Yeah. You don't want all that red stuff on your plate if you're cooking steak, you know.
Okay. So there's tons that goes into grilling, and this episode is really just scratching the surface. And I can tell, Alan, you've got way more knowledge to dish out to our listeners. And so I think we'll probably have you back at some point to dive deeper into some of these subjects.
Yeah.
But to close us out, I think a lot of the reasons why I don't like my grill is because from day one, I didn't clean it right. Because whenever I'm just done grilling, I just shut the thing. I'm like, okay, I think I'm done. I'll use the wire brush, which actually I've heard that you shouldn't do that. So I wanted to ask you, what, in your opinion, is the proper way to be cleaning, let's say, the gas grill?
Sure. For cleaning the grill, like you said, there's a lot of stuff out there about the wire brushes, about how it can leave a single wire on the grill, and then it'll get in your food the next time and somebody will eat that, and then you know, it very rarely happens, but it does happen. There's tons of different ones out there now that are made like sponge-like ones. There's one that's wood now that you use on your grill grate, and the more you push on it, it forms to your grill grates. I'm not going to get into that. You can look up a ton of them. If you're not comfortable with the wire one, you can find any of those. If
what about
you
do, the, like the wire bristle brushes? Like same those kind of, are the ones that people have a problem with because the bristle.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of saying. Off, and right. It's like a scrubbing thing. I mean, one way to get around that is, let me back up here, to clean your grill, the easiest way to clean your grill grates is to do it as soon as you're done cooking.
Right, when it's hot.
Yeah, because what I normally do is, since, like I say, the meat I'm cooking is going to rest anyway.
It's good.
Put it out, goes inside. My wife is like my best sous chef in the world. She'll come get whatever I've cooked and take it in and whatever. And then I'll take a second and just run over all the grill grates to make sure that I'm not leaving food on there, right? We want to get as much off of it as you can. And what I do is then I close it up for the day. And then the next time I grill, when I preheat it, I do two things. One is I turn it on, let it get a little hot. I kind of run over it again. I have a different brush that's more of like a sponge kind of brush. It's like plastic fibers that are designed, they're heat resistant. I use that. And then what I do is I take a paper towel, wad it up, and I'll just brush the grates real quick to make sure that I don't have any, if there's any wires left on there or anything else left on
there. Yeah. What kind of oil, should I be putting oil on it while to clean it or to prep it right before I'm cooking?
You can. It depends. If you have stainless steel grates, sometimes you'll see rust show up on them over time. Well, any type of oil that you put on there will get rid of that quick. The minute it's hot, you rub oil on it, you'll know it, come back 2 minutes later, it'll be gone. So if you're using stainless steel grates, then you definitely will need some type of oil to clean it from time to time. You don't have to necessarily put oil the grates before you cook on it, because a lot of times you're going to have oil in your food. So if like the grates are already clean, you can kind of skip that step. Really just depends. But if you use like cast iron grates, which some of these grills come with cast iron grates, oil in those is something you want to do pretty regularly, because you've seen what happens to cast iron. If you've ever messed with cast iron, you'll see how it'll oxidize very easily. So you always want to kind of oil those when you're cleaning it and stuff like that. And then the big thing about cleaning, you want to clean the outside sometimes because it just looks better. You want to come out there and use it more. But your firebox, the bottom part of your grill, you don't have to clean it out every time you cook on it. But over time, you're going to get ash down there and a bunch of grease down there. And then that can catch on fire on any grill, whether you're talking about, well, especially gas grills. That's a big thing about gas grills. The burners hover above the firebox, so everything falls down in there. So just kind of keep an eye on it. When it starts to get real junky down in there, I use a shop vac. I got a little shop vac to take it out, suck all the ash out, all the fat. I'll spray a degreaser in there maybe 2-3 times a summer, just to kind of keep everything out of there. Because if you don't do that, it'll get to the point where every time you use your grill, it'll flame up like crazy. So
I think that's where I'm at.
Yeah, you might you might be there. Get all that stuff out of the bottom. Like I say, any degreaser will loosen that stuff up and kind of get rid of it. And then if you do use the degreaser, the next time you use it, just kind of let it run for like 5-10 minutes to burn off any chemical stuff that you've put in there.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think when COVID is finally behind us, we definitely need a You Can Man get together. And we might have a grill master Alan over here, and maybe we'll just have a big old party. How's Let's that sound?
Yep.
All right. Alan, thanks so much for being on the show with us, man, dropping this knowledge.
Thanks for having me on. I love listening to it. I'm glad to be on here.
Yeah. And you're part of our Facebook group, yes?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So if you guys have any questions, I'm not sure how much Alan is on the Facebook group page, but I'm sure he'd be happy to field some of your questions.
Give him a tag, Alan Sears.
I'm on it more than Dave.
Yes. Well,
who isn't?
It's a low bar.
I think my mom is on it more than Dave.
Yeah, I'm on it more than Dave.
That's what I'm going for.
And, and like I say, I'm up for any conversation. I know different people that grill have different little philosophies about it. It's a very personal thing. So, you know, I'm up for whatever conversation.
Yeah, it's a very opinionated thing. So, all right, guys, thanks so much for joining us once again on the You Can Man podcast. Make sure to check out our Facebook group page and leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And we will catch you guys next time.